Min campus al ieħor. Miaj Karsten Xwiene. Semmilkom nilqakom il-programm ieħor fis-sensi minn campus għal ieħor miegħi Karsten Xwiene hekk fuq Campus FM. Dan huwa il-ħames programm it-tieni sensiela wara li l-sensiela jkun hemm ukoll tieni waħda, l-aħħar waħda biex fuq sensiela ta' 39 programm inkunu tkellimna ma' l-istess kwantità ta' esperti, professjonisti, kif tafu għalla forsi smajtu diġa xi programmi oħra minn dawn is-sensieliet. Nies li jiġu naqshu differenti ħafna drabi mill-kamp tal-kultura, tal-edukazzjoni, tal-istudji soċjali, ċertu drabi liġi, ċertu drabi relazzjoni internazzjonali. Nippruvaw dejjem però mhux biss nitgħallmu dwar is-suġġett tagħhom per se, forsi hemm inhom interessat dak is-suġġett, imma kważi iktar mill-lenti personali tagħhom. Dak li nsejħu bl-Ingliż il-career path, il-career development. Huwa fil-verità l-iskuża biex insiru nafu ftit iktar dawn in-nies illi xogħol minnhom nkun nafhom ġint magħhom f'ambjenti partikolari kemm lokali, nazzjonali, kif ukoll internazzjonali, oħrajn illi nammetti li sirt naf jew sirt naf iktar. Permess ta' bl-intervisti ta' tkellem il-bniedem ftit fit-tul, ma kemm fil-verità ftit inqas minn sija kif il-programm ħin mhux hemm se xi rakkonta ħajja twila jew anki relattivament żagħżugħa f'dak il-ħin biss, imma għall-inqas niftu ftit tieqa għall-aspetti anki permess ta' aneddoti, xtejjer u anki speċjalment kif kolli ħafna rispons mis-semmija minnkom stess anki dawk li jisimgħu il-podcast fuq is-sit ta' Campus FM permess tal-mużika, il-mużika li dejjem jaġlu is-semmija tagħna. U fil-fatt il-mużika tal-ftu kollha l-uqta tal-programm hija dik dejjem mogħtija lilna u nirringrazzjahom tagħha lill-proġett Midinea. Bir-rappreżentanta tagħhom Davinja Galia ta' Art Consultancy hawnhekk Malta. Però u l-mistednin tagħna dejjem jażlu l-mużika tagħhom u l-programm tagħhom kif ġieli ġara jitkellem ma' xi ħadd li jiġi mid-dinja tal-mużika jopera ħafna fih. U l-mistieden tal-lum huwa Eric van Monkhoven. Ilu mitħla ta' xena kulturali Maltija numru ta' snin, jina kważi meta bdejt nitħarreġ f'din id-dinja permess tal-kollegi bħal Dr. Vince Caruana, Professor Adrian Grima, tnej kollegi għabruk Università ta' Malta, iktar minn 20 sen ilu, anke permess ta' dit bħal-inizjament kooperativa Commerjus Third World Group. Kelli xorti niltaqa ma' Eric u ma' kollegi oħrajn. Eric huwa Belġan, però ilu ħafna snin jgħix Modica għalija. U kif ħa nisimgħu jgħaddi minn ħanajdu hekk xejn bħal Odissew minn Odissea żgħira fejn ħadem għex iltaqa adatta l-ħafna ambjenti differenti b'ħafna drabi bil-mużika tmexxih u fl-istess ħin bl-attiviżmu. Ilu ħa nisimgħu ftit dwar kif dawn iż-żewġ dinjiet marru ħafna dejjem flimkien dejjem f'sens qawwi ta' l-ambjent tiegħu, tat-territorju, tal-importanza tal-ekoloġija li lin forsi minn ftit minn dak illum li jissejjaħ greenwashing, għandna nixtru iktar, għandna nipproduċu iktar biex inkunu qed nelħu xi sensiela ta' miri msejħin ħodor, ċertu drabi nindunaw li forsi dak huwa wkoll ċertu marketing tas-suq. Biex nibqaw l-istess model fil-verità aktar milli biex nbidlu l-affarijiet ma' partikolari. Naħseb Eric huwa bniedem interessanti ħafna anke minn dak l-aspett li b'xi mod ħajtu stess turi li forsi ċertu drabi vera less is more. U fix-xogħol tiegħu li għamel ta' proġetti ma' gruppi ta' soċjetà ċivili, gruppi tal-arti, ma' aġenziji internazzjonali, xogħol li ħadu fl-Ewropa. Ovvjament, imma anke l-Afrika partikolarment il-Burkina Faso, s-Senegal, il-Niġer, il-Namibia u anki il-Brazil fl-Amerika t-isfel, l-Indonezja fl-Azja u fil-Mediterran, pajzi magrebini fil-Balkani, rabba perspettiva li kif ħajdilna u kważi twildet miegħu. waħda ta' ċittadin globali, le? Kif ġili najdu. U naħseb illi fil-xogħol tiegħu anke fid-dinja tal-mużika, pereżempju, bħala bidem li waqqaf organizzazzjoni ta' mużika jisma' Music for You, illi ħadem ħafna organizzazzjonijiet bħal World Music Lab. Naħseb illi qedtina taħlita ta' esperjenzi, ta' idejat u anki tal-mużika li kif għadtilkom hija vera importanti għalih. So hello, welcome back to all our listeners in the program Min Campus Alihor, which from Maltese to English loosely translates as hopping between campuses, connecting campuses. But as our listeners know by now, it's not only a matter of strictly speaking university campuses having to be inside them, but it's also being related to a life of intellectual pursuits, projects, project management, collaboration. And as listeners have already had the occasion to hear from my usual introduction in Maltese, which I always do on Campus FM, our University of Malta radio station, to have this constant local hook, which I find also listeners, even non-Maltese speakers, find very interesting to try to identify and sort of interpret from the Maltese mixed sounds. My guest today really fits this description of being sort of shifting and relating and moving in and out of various research centers in Europe and the Mediterranean over a number of years, going back into the 70s and the 80s, and also this element of musicality and languages, especially from a Mediterranean dimension. So Eric van Monkhoven, my guest today. Eric, thank you very much for being with me today.
Yeah, welcome. Nice to be here.
It's been a few years since we last met physically, going back, I suspect, even 20 years. In Malta through a number of projects, even through common mutual friends like Censo Caruana, who lectures here at the University of Malta on environmental issues and sustainability, and in connection with the third world movement, fair trade and cultural events. And as I do with all my guests on the show, in order not for me not to keep going on, but rather have my guest come in directly. My first question to you, which I'll then obviously keep coming back at, is if you had to describe where, let me call it your love affair with what you do started, traveling between Northern Europe, Finland, but then also moving through Belgium, Brussels, moving further down, with your frequent base being Sicily, and then reaching out even to Malta, North Africa. Where did this start from, Eric?
But you know, I'm from Belgium, which is a small country, and I grew up in Brussels, which is a very multicultural city. And okay, when I was a kid, you know, I was in the center of Brussels, moving from one neighborhood to another one, and it was full of these ethnic shops and smells, perfumes, sounds from other countries, and meeting people mostly from the Balkan and the Mediterranean at that time. And I've always had that in mind somehow, and then, yeah, let's say in my personal journey, I just figured out that Belgium was nice, but it was small, and there was the whole world out there, and I wanted to know more, to learn directly from various experience, and that's somehow, you know, there is kind of a say that what in the indigenous community in Canada, where they say, you know, my home is planet Earth and my garden is the universe. So that's somehow the dimension where I've been finding myself.
Yes. Eric, one of the things you mentioned to me in preparing for this interview, because like with many guests, I would know a few things about you and then get to know more about you that way. And I'm really happy to be able to share these experiences, these life experiences, which sometimes are indicative of a career path, of sort of the development in a professional way, which listeners of Campus FM are most interested in, especially maybe younger listeners and students, but not only, also the personal dimension. And one of the things which really struck me was you're saying, in connection with this metaphor, this sort of Canadian multicultural metaphor of kindergartens and playing areas, which is when you say that you live sort of in the Flemish part of Belgium, but because you were French speakers, you were not really encouraged or even not allowed to go to the Flemish kindergarten. And then moving to Brussels maybe opened up a bit more the bilingual dimension. Could you say something about this sort of, it's not strange because it's really common in human behavior, especially in places which are very multicultural. But there is this resistance, isn't there? And somehow you resisted the resistance, so to speak. I apologize for the play on words.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Belgium, it's an historical fact that, you know, we have two large speech communities, so the French speakers in the south part of the country, and then we have the Dutch speakers in the northern part. Then, of course, we have also a small German community at the border of Germany, and then we have Brussels, so the metropolitan area, which is bilingual. And let's say there is a bit of nationalism within those communities. And I mean, yeah, when I was a kid, I mean, I don't remember myself. It's my parents told me that, okay, we were living in Ghent, which is a very nice town in Flanders. And they wanted to put me at the kindergarten, the local kindergarten, but I mean, even if I have a Dutch name, you know, our family has always been French speakers. And so the authorities didn't allow it. So we just had to move. And I don't know what's the situation nowadays, but because Belgium has always been kind of laboratory of federalism. Yeah. Yeah. So now there are the cultural communities and... But at that time, it was like this. And there has always been this kind of struggle, language war, let's say, or cultural war. But I mean, when you see it from outside, I have no problem with that. I mean, but I just felt that it was wrong because I lost the opportunity to learn Flemish,
Was it something you managed to learn later on, or become more exposed to and even engage in later, or was it a missed opportunity then, Eric?
Well, not really, you know, because let's say the difference also is that Dutch speakers are, I would say, they are more international and more open-minded towards other languages and culture, mostly English and things like that. The French community is very Frenchy, you know. So, I mean, even in my family, I'm the only one who speaks several languages.
Okay.
You know, just to make some fun, you know, my father one day decided that he should start to learn English. So he bought this Assimil, you know, this language courses, and for 25 years he has been on the first page. I mean, so it's not, you know, people don't feel that they need to, you know, to, I mean, we are French and we belong to this culture, and and that's it.
Yes,
I believe that I believe that those things have changed over time because you know because of globalization. But at that time, you know, also what is important to understand is the context. Europe was very different than today. You know, I mean, there was much more protectionism. It was more difficult to move from one country to another. And I think this is also interesting and important to see that in within half a century, 50 years, many things have changed because of globalization and the market are developing.
One of the things you mentioned also before this recording, this program, was sort of the quite big, important shift from going from a world dominated by the Cold War, yourself having been born in the 60s, so the child of the 60s, as other people from the generation say, with all the complications around that, to a world which is not only post-Cold War, but also in this part of the world, very much centered on working together, collaboration, the EU, the European Union being one example of that. And even in recent years, with the enlargement in the beginning of this century, this millennium, also Malta and many smaller countries sort of coming in to be part of that. So I think that's, again, there in the background, but maybe not even too much in the background, because it really influences our lives on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think, you know, this was very important, at least for me, because you know, our generation, this baby boomer generation, you know, we live really in a time of material optimism, you know. I mean, people or parents were kids during the war, they wanted to forget about that. The US with the Marshall Plan, it fueled the economy of Western Europe. I mean, there was no unemployment, you know, people were very optimistic. I mean, we could live, you know, like the upper class of the previous generation somehow. Yes. Yes. So we have all kinds of tools and toys coming. And I mean, we were not really taking care of anything. We were just in this affluence and I mean, that was one side. On the other side, there was still this Cold War, let's say, fear somehow, because, I mean, we didn't have COVID, but, I mean, we were just expecting a nuclear war or something like that. And that was really a strong feeling. And there were also this questioning this new model of economy, because I mean, I'm still thinking that, you know, when material affluence is nice, whatever you can think about it, but it has always hidden costs. And so we have to think about that. I mean, it's not really, I mean, a journalist many years ago in Finland told me, but you never sleep at night because we are thinking of those things. But, you know, I'm living in Italy nowadays. We have, the debt of the country is 150%. So, I'm thinking, I mean, what will be the future?
Yes.
So somebody will have to pay the bill. So, that were some issues. I mean, the issues at that time for me were, you know, peace, environment, this collaboration with the southern part of the world that we call them developing countries. And when I was 18, I was a bit frustrated because there was no university offering, you know, courses about those kind of things. There was no way to go to learn about, you know, something that was a bit alternative or a bit more experimental or a bit, And so I made my own search, and I went my
in a way, in an ironic way, or not really, in a fitting way. It reminds you a bit of when you comment about your father being an engineer and your mother a teacher in fashion design clothes, and somehow you seem to combine a little bit those skills by crafting, cutting out your own path. But Eric, before we delve into that phase, which is the most exciting phase, and I really appreciate sort of the historical background within which you have placed us so far. But let's catch a breather by turning already to another aspect which really dominates your life, which somehow gives you a soundscape. And like everyone else on the show, I have asked you to prepare two pieces of music. And I would like to ask you to introduce the first piece of music.
Yes, this first piece of music is very, I mean, I like it because, you know, it's it's a piece of music by a friend, which is a half brother somehow, and he's a Canadian, but of Aboriginal ancestry, so from the indigenous communities of Canada. And when we started to work at music with him, so in the 80s, I mean, he was 20, and I told him that, you know, he was singing in French and trying to, you know, we were living in France at that time, so. Mm-hmm. And I say, but why you don't start to do something about your roots, you know, because he had also a problem of identity, you know, because mm-hmm. he didn't know. When you are from those minorities who have uh-huh. been, you know, so much oppression, you don't know to what and to whom you belong anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we started this research on indigenous Canadian indigenous music, and he just you know, put up some songs and some material, and I would say maybe it was really a pioneering work, because nowadays, and what is nice is that nowadays, especially in Canada, the indigenous people's community have their own music, their rights are recognized. Of course, there are always, it's always a struggle, but I mean, something has gone, and you find much more many indigenous people, artists, and so that's that's very right. important for me.
Yes, let's listen to this, and then in fact come back, because the second part of the program today with Eric van Monkhoven Minkampu Salihor will take us into this particular episode in your journey. So let's listen to it.
Bye. kigenan akam lamunik ninik tupumel kigenan akam lamunik ninik tupam deli mi maji salul cetan deli mi maji salul
great track, also something I guess on many stations you don't really sort of have enough of these sounds which come in, but Campus FM does this as well as a university radio, which is very open as in this series, in this program in Campus Alihor, today with Eric van Monkhoven, who's taking us through a number of developments in the recent history of Europe, but even on a global level, very much linking us to what happened also on an environmental, ecological, very human orientation, but within a very environmental context. And I guess, Eric, at around the age of 18, so coming of age in a way, we were talking a little bit during the music track, how somehow you wanted to go beyond the simple political scenarios and divides, and started off on another leg of your journey. So in this section, could you tell us a little bit about that, how you were seeing also your friends getting involved more in politics, how you were influenced by a number of thinkers and actors, and how that also took you further, even physically, in terms of your voyage, in terms of your travel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what was important for me was that in the 72, there was the first United Nations conference on the environment in Stockholm. And in the same period, there was the publication of the Limits to Growth, which was by the Club of Rome, where they were just putting out some questions about, I mean, how far can we go with the development model that we want to be universal, but I mean, is it something possible? Is it realistic? And I mean, it has proved not to be realistic at all. I mean, if we see, I mean, all those issues related to climate change and, you know, because already in 84, I mean, we were consuming more and more fast than the Earth can renew its own resources. So, so there was something to do about that, and just to show people to experiment with something that, let's say, it's more sustainable, but sustainable has become so, I mean, it has no really content anymore, you know. For me, sustainable, it means that it's balanced also, that, you know, that there is some balance in what we do. I mean, we cannot go further with a few people getting very rich and consuming a lot and the social majority is just being there, you know. So I mean, this for me was a question, and I wanted to find some answers. I mean, the answers, they are good for me. I'm not sure they are good for everyone. So, you know, everyone is to walk his own path and to, you know, learn and try out. I mean, and so in the end of the 70s, I just get to know that a group of, let's say, you can call them ecotopists or people, you know, with some ecological ideals.
It's an interesting word, ecotopists, yes. It's quite struck me.
Yeah, you know, they were in the suburb of Paris, and they wanted to experiment and to pioneer new ways, new lifestyles that were more sustainable. But they didn't want to do it for themselves, you know. So there was much importance to the education, and those education aspects would come from the business side, let's say, of the activities, you know. So, I mean, somehow I joined them for 3 months during a summer just to, you know, just to figure out by myself what those people were doing and I would fit in that and at the place. And then it became the first leg of a 15-year journey with those people. So that's how it started, you know. So it was... We were living in a community, you know, what is called intentional communities. At that time, it was, it was still going on. And but because we were living in community, you know, we had much time and energy to do other things. And so we invested all this time and this energy in creating, let's say, alternatives, yes. You know, just yes. Generally. And mostly we had started a network of cooperatives for green consuming, you know, so we were bringing together consumers and producers, and we were selling organic food and all things that were organic, green. So we were among the first really people active in that, because we were doing it at the price of the supermarket somehow. So, you know, so people were coming. We had really, in 3 years, I think, we had about 30,000 members. So it was growing very fast as a huge network, but we had different focus. Of course, food was the main one, and agriculture, because it's a key question for everybody every day. You have to eat 3 times a day. So, but then it developed on many other sectors, travel, clothes.
It's interesting, Eric, because linking to the 70s and the 80s, and also global developments happening with maybe even the media in general and international organizations trying to shine a brighter light on certain local issues, which are, however, were also global, like famine, like sustainability, like trying to beat poverty with sustainable means. You were sort of looking at very local examples as well, and supporting grassroots movements from Nordic European models to the Indian subcontinent, but also the African and the South American subcontinents. So a very sort of integral, organic approach to trying to see how people fit into their environments, and rather than being exploitative and short-term in their orientation of survival, rather adopting a longer-term approach. And then you sort of obviously move with the times, because one has to. And for good and bad, sort of what maybe you also described as being sort of the first real movements which took off in this particular period of time, things moved on. And with the beginning of the 1990s, with the sort of onset of the series of Earth Summits in Rio, coincidentally, the day we're recording this, at the beginning of autumn of 2021, there's sort of the pre-COP preparations going on, and people like Greta Thunberg again sort of trying to up the ante on action which needs to be there rather than just rely on words and commitments. But this shift, before we come to the day, because we'll do this towards the end of the program, but this shift between sort of the 70s and the 80s to the 90s, which you were also very much at the heart of, I guess on the one hand, you might have started exposing certain rhetorical problems, but on the other hand, started connecting you even further on a global dimension.
Yeah, you know, that's it. I mean, we have always also to remember that there was no internet at that time, you know. So all our connection were personal connection. And we had been lucky because being in Paris area and France, you know, there were many communities, ethnic communities from all over the world. So one of the main things we have done at that time, it was to offer them a space where they could speak, present themselves, I mean, with their own culture, traditions, and also the issue they were fighting with. So this put, you know, it put us, let's say, on a global dimension, because those people, of course, were in connection with their own communities. And so it was very pragmatical what we were doing. You know people from that area, you know the problems, if you can do something. So you just try to do it. And the difference, I would say, between, you know, this 1972, you know, United Nations Conference and the 92 Earth Summit was the place that had been given and taken by the grassroots movement. So that's the difference. Because, you know, the first conference was only a governmental conference. So the Earth Summit was different because, you know, the people could say the voice, and the voice was listened to somehow. I mean, mostly we have been involved in the preparation of the Earth Summit directly, because we were our two main issues were desertification and indigenous people. So we wanted to put the indigenous peoples on the map, and we wanted also to answer this issue of desertification, which now has become, you know, climate change and things like that. And I mean, it came like this. It was not really a plan, but just being, you know, in the middle of the action, so you come up with key issues that you have to put forward and try to enlarge the debate and make people thinking about what's going on.
That's right.
And also thinking about the solution. And I mean, the only thing I would say, maybe that's my feeling today, you know, is that nowadays we speak a lot about green stuff, green capitalism. And for me, the main issue that it's still capitalism, you know. So we have not come to the what I call the ecosophy, you know. So the philosophy, the really the human aspects of this, you know. I mean, you don't question the consumption
because the model has remained mostly the same. So that is the basis of the model that we still envisage, practice, and somehow still engage in. So it's sort of some form of, let me call it, for want of a better word, cosmetic change, with lots of work, lots of research, lots of funds going into it. But yes, as you said, sort of a sustainable shift, which is maybe not really radical and strong enough. So let's pause for the second and last time in the program, Min Campus Alihor, today with me, Karsten Schwierek, and my guest, Eric van Monkhoven. We're still in theme. This second track, Eric, will keep us going in terms of this dimension. So Northern Resonance and going to Dalarna. Can you tell us something brief before we listen to it?
Yes, so this is a Swedish string trio. So they are young musicians who called me like 1 year ago, and you know, they were started in that music business, and they wanted to have a coach to, I mean, to show them a little bit the way on how to start up and survive in the music industry. So I just took them with me, and yeah, they are doing nicely, and it's very interesting.
In fact, we haven't had the time to really go into your work too much, into the musical dimension. But maybe now in the last part, we'll mention that on your more recent and current work, also in terms of the organization Music For You and other collaborations you've had. But let's listen to Northern Resonance first. Brings us to the last section of the program today, Min Campus Alihor. There's a lot more we could say, and I would really like to cover Eric. But through this voyage, physical, mental, ecological, temporal, we come to the last 10 minutes and somehow start to try tying some loose ends. One thing which I think is worth mentioning is your recent and current research, always in the field of ecology. And maybe you can tell us a little bit sort of recently, even with your base in southern Italy and in Sicily, where you have somehow developed further roots and where things seem to be going. And maybe also a hint to the world folk music dimension that we have been also hinting at.
Okay, but yeah. Actually, I'm not so far from Malta because I'm living in Sicily, in Modica, so it's 10 years I'm living here with my family. And it has always been a kind of dream somehow because I developed this passion for the Mediterranean with all this richness of culture and movement and that's also what brought me little bit more in what I'm doing nowadays, which is working with the music, not as a musician, but as a promoter, a producer, and a booking agent. Because, I mean, especially in my field, which is folk and world music, this idea, this concept of cultural diversity, sometimes it's the message is coming much more easier through the arts than through making long speeches and trying to
More power.
Explain what you are doing. So now it has been 10 years. I'm in the music, helping artists to get somewhere. I mean, just trying to make a living with the music and that's where I am now.
That's a very practical way of approaching the development and the evolution, in a way, of what you've been doing in this field. One other very practical way, Eric, is the projects dimension. You had led a multi-annual project related to ecology, actually called very, very aptly so, Ecolandia in Reggio Calabria. I think at that point, it was also when we got in touch because of the fur trade element related to the cooperative here in Malta. And somehow you were looking also, and still are, at the dimensions of sort of social justice, social development in relation to a balanced approach to one's life here on Earth. Could you tell us something more about that?
Yes. Let's say this. I mean, this kind of social and cultural dimension for me has always been important, and so I've been, you know, like a project designer and grant writers for many eco-social projects in the Mediterranean, in southern Italy, in Indonesia, Brazil, Africa. I mean, I've always been trying to work with local communities and listening to them, to their needs, and trying to use their potential to grow, and maybe in a way also to resist the myth of, you know, progress, modernity. I mean, those kind of things. But it's what also brought me to Malta somehow, because we had this nice project, MET 2000, so at the beginning of the new millennium, that we were, you know, just trying to discuss the role of the Mediterranean in this, I mean, in all this field of social innovation, environmental dimension, culture, heritage, and trying to link, you know, those issues together. And I mean, it's still a work in progress, but it's exciting. There is still much to do.
Yes, Eric, maybe because like you, most of the time I spend is in the Mediterranean. And possibly, hopefully, after the worst of the pandemic of the COVID-19 being over, travel starts again and collaboration and projects. However, it is quite real, and I admit it myself, that challenges can seem sometimes too big unless they are tackled together. So collaborative thinking and action become really, really even more important. Because each to their own, each working with their own devices isn't really adding up. Would you say that is a problem which you observe yourself? And how maybe optimism can be really sustained by more people trying to share what they're doing in a way, which is what you've been doing all your life, all your career.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, people have to come together again. So it's, I mean, part of it can be, of course, using internet and things like that. But as we know, there is so much noise there that it's not easy to create its own platform. But I mean, we have tools for that. But I mean, it starts by meeting people face to face and sit together, listening and trying to figure out. So then after, internet is very useful to keep connected, but you need really to have this full immersion in-person meetings. And actually, I'm looking very positively to this new round of Creative Europe calls from the European Union, especially for the islands, because I think we should move a little bit forward by bringing together more islands of the Mediterranean to promote the cultural dimension, the arts, and also to make more research on the roots and, you know, all these kind of things. And I have some partners in the Balearic Islands, in Corsica, that we have been talking now for 2 or 3 years, how to move in that direction, especially for the arts, performing arts, music, on how to showcase a little bit more what is existing, but not individually, but as a brand.
That's right.
New brand, and I really hope, I mean, we can move in that direction. And
in fact, although we're in the last couple of minutes, I also wanted to mention that somehow your experience shows how sort of there is a grounding, how there is a practice, how there is the reflective research dimension, which is very much applied. We haven't had time to really go into the number of thinkers who have influenced you and people who you have collaborated with, even from a Mediterranean dimension. The people who would definitely appeal to me are people like Edgar Morin, Ortonino Perna, for example, who have really inspired even other people, even here in Malta. I think of people like Cenzo Caruan or Adrian Grima, for example, mutual friends. As a very last question, which 2 minutes to go, what would you say is maybe the more hopeful dimension for future collaboration? So maybe not the most urgent, because that's what I usually ask. But in this very positive conversation I have had with you, what would you say are the more positive prospects one can look forward to in the near, maybe even the long-term future?
I mean, that, you know, to look at your family, at the people who are, you know, just next door, talking with them, listening to them, you know, and keeping the relationship, you know. We have invested so much in communication, but very little in relationship. And that's the issue I have myself with my boy. And, you know, he's very good with the computers. But, you know, when it comes to be socially in a group, or, you know, there is much learning and teaching. And we have to keep that. I mean, I think the elders, they were more in the relationship and less in the communication. But so we have to bridge, you know, the various dimensions. And I think that, you know, if we are together, there is always something positive that comes out.
That's a really good point as well, because it's very fitting in what we're doing. I'm in the second series of this program in Campus Ali, or halfway through almost on Campus FM, a number of months now of doing these type of interviews online, as other things we do online, but somehow maybe recapturing also the face-to-face and the humanity of our communication, and somehow keeping that in mind, exactly what you said, sort of working together and less of talking at each other, but more of talking together, listening and working collaboratively. So Eric, I thank you very much for this conversation. I found it very inspiring, and I'm quite sure our listeners on Campus FM have done too. So thank you once again, Eric.
Okay, you are welcome, and I hope to come back to Malta very soon.
indeed, it would be great. See you, thank you.
Next mine an intervist ma Eric Van Monkhoven, kif smajtu ċittadin b'nazzjonalità tal-Belġju, però fil-verità dak il-lensejħu ċittadin globali li speċjalment fuq livell Ewropew Mediterranju manki lil hemm ħadem għex kollabora u vera jħossukomdu f'ambjenti fejn il-kreattività, l-imben lej l-ekoloġija u il-mużika li forma tant importanti tal-espressjoni tal-bniedem jitwaħdu f'aspetti differenti ta' xogħlu. Nirringrazzjakom ħafna tal-li kontu miegħi llum tal-li segwitu tal-programm u nistedinkom terġgħu tingħaqdu miegħi programm ieħor fis-sensiela minn Campus għal ieħor. صحيح.